Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Hello, did you miss us? We're back.
You know what's funny is I've been telling people, it feels like it's come up more often in the last 2 weeks. People are like, oh, you do a podcast? They'll see one of the signs around the store or ask about it. And I'm like, yeah, it's just not at the moment.
People are clamoring for
it. It's only been 2 weeks, but I've had several people like, did you guys stop doing the podcast?
So, Nick, you were out doing some vacation-y stuff.
Yep.
And then
Serena was out doing some less vacation-y stuff.
Some less vacation-y stuff. Yeah, I had to be out for that. And we're back.
It didn't work out. So we had a couple weeks of just like too much work.
And you know what else? We were switching over formally to our new point of sale system.
Right.
You guys have, I'm sure, seen us scanning everything twice between and over two computers for about a month.
No longer.
Yes. We're still working out a few kinks in it, but we're past all the big stuff.
Right.
And anyway, welcome to the podcast.
Yes, welcome back.
We're gonna make this the most badass show you've ever heard in your whole life.
Oh, wow.
Dave, am I overpromising?
Dave writing checks so we cannot possibly cash.
All right, well, we're going to try real hard. You know,
that expression, try real hard, seems about, that's achievable. Welcome to the Try Hard Show.
Yes.
You know, the expression, writing checks your body can't cash or whatever.
Your butt can't cash, yeah.
Nobody writes checks anymore.
Oh, that's
true. We need
true.
Like a, you're tapping debits your ass can't cover or something.
I'm always amused by if I go to a place and they have a sign up that says we no longer accept checks. Yeah. I'm like, did I time travel a little bit?
Right.
Did I,
like... what that means is they have at least one or two people that are coming in dropping off payments by check.
They had to go ahead and cut that person off.
Yeah,
like, can you still write checks at HEB?
I don't believe so, no.
Oh, interesting.
I don't think there's anywhere you can actually write a check that isn't like you're paying a bill online. But I don't know, technically, maybe I could go to HEB today and be like, here is my personal check for $12 so I can buy these grapes. And they'd be like, well, I guess we have to take it.
Here's this bit of paper that says I have money, but I don't have money.
Here's this bit of paper that promises I have money. You have no way of knowing whether it's true or not.
$12, by the way, solid amount of grapes. You're going to be set for a little bit.
I mean, it's like maybe a bundle or two.
I think it's a couple. But
I think it's at least a couple.
Yeah. How many grapes does $12 buy? This is the question we're going to spend at least 30 minutes on.
You guys thought you were here for comics and games?
Comics?
Stuff?
No. This is the podcast.
I think
now.
It's truly dependent upon what type of grapes you're getting.
Cotton candy grapes.
Those are going to be on the higher end.
They are on the higher end. They are tasty, though.
But if you just get basic red grapes or basic green grapes,
yeah.
You can get a lot.
You can get a lot more, but they're not as delicious.
It. I don't get y'all's fancy ones. But let's move on to games or something because I'm trying to save these people.
So we're just done with grape talk? Is that what I'm hearing?
I guess. Dave all right. is all like, all right. done with grapes.
Go look up the Whitest Kids You Know sketch.
Don't do that.
The Grapest. And then you'll be done with grapes as well.
All right.
Shall we move on to apples?
Yes, apples. How about let's move on to games. We've got 3 weeks worth to talk about here.
Yep.
And we've gotten some decent stuff in the meantime. Betrayal on the House on the Hill came back.
Yep.
Which we've been out for a little bit, and also came back with some expansions. There is a one's a standalone.
Yeah, one's a card game.
So there's a Betrayal of the Yuletide Tale, which is a Christmas themed expansion for the original game, and then there's a Betrayal Deck of Lost Souls, which is a card game that you play as a standalone card game that is around the Betrayal theme.
That one was very popular.
Just so people know, if in case you haven't played it, and it has been out of print, and sometimes it's just been out at times. Betrayal of House on the Hill is a quasi-cooperative horror game that's pretty approachable. Like, even if you don't do a ton of games, you could probably get into this, where you go in, like, with your little Scooby-Doo team, and you investigate for a little while.
You're exploring a haunted house.
Exploring a haunted house, and a little ways into the game, something triggers the haunt, and one of you will become a vampire or a werewolf or much weirder things. There's actually 50 different things, I believe, that can happen, and you pull out this booklet, and then you, like, it's got, here's the rules for that person to survive. Like, if he's the vampire, he's got to, you know, bite everybody or whatever. And if you're going to stop him, and then there's the rules for the other players. Like, you have to destroy all his coffins or find something. My favorite weird one that I know about, I've never played it, is a giant bird, like a mythic bird, picks up the whole house and is taking it away, and you have to find the parachutes and get to the windows. I'm like, that is bonkers.
That's great. That's fantastic.
But anyway, yes, it's cooperative to a point, and then you then it's everybody versus one of them. Yeah.
We got the Cowboy Bebop RPG.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Cowboy Bebop seems like a fun setting to play RPGs
in.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Be a
space bounty hunter.
Sly but low life bounty hunter. Yeah.
We got the new game from the creators of Root, and Oath, and some other games called Arcs, Conflict and Collapse in the Reach. It's a space civilization building game.
Okay.
I talked to somebody earlier. I guess it is not like Root. It is not asymmetrical. You are sort of building your civilization. But in addition to the main game, we have the Legend and Lore expansion, the Blighted Reach campaign expansion, which I believe turns into more of a legacy game, and the Kickstarter exclusive miniatures, which we have until they sell out.
Okay.
And it does have the same art style as
well. Yeah, the art's really nice.
The art is really cool.
We got One-Shot Wonders back in. This is a D&D 5e compatible hardcover.
I bought that book when it first came out, and then it disappeared.
I got it for my kid. It's really good. It's basically a series of two-page adventures.
Yeah.
With really nice art and some fun ideas.
Yeah, many of which I think are like kind of fun, like intro to D&D or like slightly off the beaten path adventures. And also they have thematic like tags and stuff on them, so you can be like, oh, I need an Arctic adventure or an Arctic incident, and you can just like go to that section and it'll just slot in.
Yeah.
And there's some indexes in the back where it's like, you want a scary adventure? Go to one of these. You want an introductory adventure? Go to one of these. You want a town adventure? And they're all like fun and nicely illustrated. So yeah, just a cool book of like short adventures.
We got Catan New Energies. This is I believe already sold out at distributor level. It is a futuristic version of Catan. So basically, it's the 21st century. It's not the agrarian like settlers anymore. You need
it's like
to
your daddy's Catan.
Invest in clean energy resources or offer fossil fuels, which might cause disaster for the island. So basically, it is the same Catan mechanic of harvesting, trading, building.
Yeah.
But it also adds like power plants, energy tokens, environmental events.
Oh, that sounds
fun.
And
it's sort of like, what if you know, it goes into the future of Catan?
That's actually pretty cool. Take these characters out of the Islander time, Stone Age times they were in, or whatever.
You can take the islands out of the Islanders, but you can't take the island out of the Islanders.
This was like medieval, kind of.
Yeah. You can take the settlers out of Catan, but you can't take Catan out of settlers.
Hell yeah!
I don't know.
I'd wear that shirt.
Sure.
What does that shirt mean? I don't know.
We got an expansion for a game called Forest Shuffle, which unfortunately has been out of stock for a little while.
Say Forest Shuffle?
Forest Shuffle.
Okay.
The expansion is called Alpine Expansion.
Is that the Forest Gump dance?
I don't think it is.
Do the Forest Shuffle.
No, it's the Forest Kelly.
Oh, okay. No, sorry, what is this?
It's the Forest Kelly and Gene Kelly mashed up to do a dance.
Oh, no. Now nobody's going to remember what this actual game is.
It's called Forest Shuffle. If you know it or you don't, it's an expansion for a game we don't have right now.
Ah, okay.
But if you played Forest Shuffle and you liked it, this expansion just came out.
Right on.
We got the newest DC deck building. We got Justice League Dark, which you can buy either as a standalone game or as an expansion for the existing games. Yeah. I have played this several times. It adds a mechanic where you sort of seal your cards, like Mystical Seal.
Yeah.
So you take a card out of your deck, you put it in your score pile. You no longer get that card, so it's not clogging up your deck, but you get the points for it at the end of the game.
Okay.
So it makes some interesting choices.
Yeah.
And then it's got, you know, a bunch of different magic characters, that kind of thing. There's specific weaknesses you can play with where the weaknesses do different things.
Okay.
There's also a cool thing. The weaknesses in DC deck building are usually a
and
thing.
And I assume it's all the cards are like Zatanna and John Constantine.
Yep. Detective
and
Chip.
Dead Man and
yep.
everybody.
Dead
yeah.
Man. Yeah.
Blue Devil.
Swamp Thing. Blue Devil.
Yep.
The mechanic of DC deck building has that weakness where it's like if you get it, it gives you minus 2 points the game to claw your deck. Well, in Just League Dark, you can discard two cards on your turn to put a weakness back. You can get rid of
interesting.
It. It's kind of a cool thing.
It's like
not,
a counter spell.
You're not quite
or something.
As stuck. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And then they did a two-player. They always do these two-player rivals versions.
Yep.
The one in this one is Shazam versus Black Adam.
Oh, that's fun. I've played the rivals ones. They're very cleverly done.
They're good. I've played the Flash and Reverse Flash. You played Batman Joker, right?
Yes, and maybe the like Hal Sinestro or something like that.
I couldn't remember what the other one was.
Yeah, basically each one you play, you have like sort of three incarnations of the character. Each one gets a little bit tougher. And so that if they take down your first guy, you then get a slightly tougher incarnation of the character and then a slightly the boss level version of you.
Yep.
So like in other words, if you're losing, in a way, you're going to get to your more powerful character faster to balance it out, like it was some kind of Mario Kart balance.
Yes, exactly.
Which is a good thing.
We got Transformers Chaos Unleashed. That's a new expansion for their deck builder, which is Unicron. And you got a co-op or one versus many mode.
Do you just win the game if you have Unicron?
Somebody has to do an Orson Welles impersonation.
Well, it's either co-op where you're all working against Unicron, or one player plays Unicron and everybody else is fighting him.
You know, when he opens up his, like, valve to shoot stuff, it kind of looks goatsy-ish, I'm sorry to say.
Why, Dave? Why?
It's just... I didn't want to see Unicron's butthole, but they made me see it.
It's kind of his chest hole.
You know, you call it what you want, Nick. The man's a sphere.
His chest goatsy.
He's not always a sphere.
That's true. He can
become a giant robot. That was the big reveal in the movie.
I'm talking about when he's a sphere, though.
Oh, okay.
It's more like his mouth.
Sure.
That doesn't make it better.
Sure it is.
We got the Pendragon core rulebook and the Grey Knight expansion, these are revamps of older books, as I understand, right?
I think Pendragon as a system has existed for like 30 or 40 years, maybe. But it's one of the more famous systems for players who kind of do the deeper dive into RPGs.
Right.
It's an Arthurian setting that, like, where all the rules are geared towards really kind of creating that medieval atmosphere and the literature of the Arthurian stuff. I'm sure Thomas Malory's Le Morte d'Arthur stuff in particular.
Yeah.
And, like, you can, like, the most popular thing to do is actually in this one is to play out the famous saga of Arthur over like decades, and your character can grow old, have sons, get castles and keep them up.
Yes,
and
it's
then
all about lineage.
It's all about the lineage, and like it's meant to foster that. And
I'm role playing getting old every day.
How's it going?
Not great. I don't like it, and I would like to re-roll.
But they put out like a new main book, which by the way has the Green Knight on the cover, which I'm sure was inspired because the movie that hit recently and put that legend back in Arthurian nerds' minds. And I don't know who the Grey Knight is, but it's like an adventure, I guess.
He's the old knight, I think. He's the guy who gets old and his hair turns gray.
It could be Sir Pellinore. That's a real character. I didn't just make it up.
You can make up whatever you want. I wouldn't know.
It's the Fisher King story.
Oh, I've heard the Fisher King.
Yeah.
I saw that Robin Williams movie.
Yep.
Don't understand it, but I did see it.
He has a wound that won't heal.
Oh. Don't we all?
Yeah, it's probably some kind of symbolic of STDs. You know, that's not even like fully a joke. I feel like it might have been in the original myth some sort of loose analog.
Again, you could say whatever you wanted. We wouldn't know.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, actually, the Green Knight symbolizes herpes. Really? Yeah.
Sir Pellinore got the clap again.
I wanted to mention the Grey Knight. I thought was interesting. It's got the writer is Larry DiTilio.
Oh, I didn't know that name.
Yeah.
Did he work on sci-fi? Babylon 5 with JMS.
Did he? Maybe he was. But also, I think he worked on the Buck Rogers game in the 80s for...
Wild. You know what? I never had that, but I had played the video game based on it, which were in the style of the D&D Pool of Radiance and stuff. So if people can imagine the Baldur's Gate, but with like a fun sci-fi Buck Rogers.
Yeah, he is a film writer. He worked on Babylon 5 and The Hitchhiker.
Hitchhiker. Now, there was a great show to watch if you were a kid hoping to find some nudity
TV. So apparently he died in 2019, so this is a reprint of some kind. Probably with new writers.
His
name's on the card. I don't think so. I mean, it's possible, but I wouldn't think you would write... I think you would do D&D if you're going to write from Beyond. But I guess he worked on the original Transformers Animated, She-Ra, He-Man, Beast Wars.
Oh, that's probably... If he worked with JMS, because JMS worked on He-Man too, so that's probably where that happened.
Yeah. Although he worked on He-Man in 2002.
Oh,
so some kind of new stuff too.
That was, I heard that was a pretty well liked revamp.
Wrote some episodes of Captain Power. That's probably where he worked. He did some additional dialogue.
Yep.
Right where he met.
That was a JMS thing too. Yeah.
I'm looking at like his animated credits go all the way back. Yeah. And then I was like, does it have his game credits? It does not. But I swear he worked on like the. You know, they did the...
He created one of the big campaigns, Masks of Nyarlathotep, for Chaosium's... Right when Call of Cthulhu was breaking out in the early 80s, he wrote one of the big ones. They say is considered one of the best role-playing adventures of all time and won an Origins Award.
Oh, wow.
So, there you go.
Anyway, he worked on this book from Beyond the Grave, so that's cool.
Very yeah, that's very awesome.
We got Unmatched Slings and Arrows. This is the Unmatched game where you like you use cards and miniatures to battle it out.
And battle out between like famous characters from either like history or legend.
They've done a lot of Marvel ones recently.
Yeah, but it could be like there's King Arthur, there's Alice in Wonderland, but she's all like it's a little, you know, she's like a little badass Alice. There's Big characters from Jurassic Park. Yep. There's characters from Buffy.
Buffy.
Some Marvel characters like you mentioned.
Dracula.
Like Deadpool.
Jack the Ripper, I think.
Bruce Lee had a short-lived Bruce one Lee. We can't get, sorry. Yeah. We tried.
Deadpool. But.
Deadpool.
The new one, Slings and Arrows, as you might guess, is Shakespeare
themed. All Shakespeare characters. Yeah, I've looked at this and somebody told me, they did playtesting for it about it. There's Shakespeare himself, Hamlet, the witches.
I saw the witches.
And I think Titania.
Okay, all right.
And each one has like kind of slightly tongue-in-cheek cards and powers and stuff like that. That where it's like Shakespeare has like the power of like iambic pentameter, and like the cards have like certain they're I think they're written out in verse. And like if you have like can like get some cards together that like create the balance to do the right iambic pentameter, yep. It like you know it'll double your attacks and things like that.
Nice.
I believe Hamlet has some sort of to be or not to be power. I don't know if that means like he can like ghost and become like an undead or something like that. But like they have some fun powers from what I could see.
Witches have like power of three. Feet
yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No doubt.
Well, what's great is that I've been playing some of my own match lately. They're all really good.
Yep.
They're very very quick to play, but everybody character has different abilities.
And there's a bunch of different locales, like you know. Castles and thematic stuff to yep. the various characters.
With this, you can mix and match as many as you want of them.
Yep.
So this means you could have Hamlet fight Dracula, and you could do the Hamlet versus vampires that the Whitest Kids You Know previewed in their skit.
Let's see. If people wanted to go catch this sketch, they should look up
What Really Happened to Abraham Lincoln.
Is that the one?
Something like that. Yes.
Something like that. Whitest Kids You Know, which is the name of a sketch group. Yep. If you don't know it, it was like 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Well,
one of them wrote Barbarian.
The very, very entertaining. Horror movie from last year or the year before.
2 years.
And anyway, what are we talking about?
Whitest Kids You Know.
Yes, look up the sketch with Lincoln.
Yeah,
just
do it.
There's a lot of good stuff going on in there.
And then just go down the rabbit hole like we did and watch a bunch of their sketches.
Yep, Space Potatoes.
Space Potatoes is also good. We got a game called Agueda, City of Umbrellas, which I don't know too much about, but it looked pretty cool. It was sort of pattern matching kind of game.
Okay.
We got a game called Adventure Party, which is an RPG party game.
Oh, okay.
So you're like asking questions and like it's like...
Oh, you mean like it's a... That's right. I remember looking at this when it came in.
It's a neat idea.
You don't mean like a dungeon party. You mean like it's a party game.
Yes.
It actually... It did look like it had some fun stuff that it's all steeped in like sort of the way you talk about Dungeons and Dragons.
So yeah, it says part guessing game, part role-playing experience. You're working together to collectively attempt to score the most experience points possible. You take turns rolling your D20 in secret and describe what your character does. And you describe their plans and the outcome of their actions. And then people are trying to guess like what you rolled, basically.
Right, I believe they bid Price is Right style. Like if you say like, I smash the door so hard it goes flying off its hinges. And they're like, this dude rolled a nat 20 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but it might be like, well, it didn't explode apart. Maybe it's an 18 or 19. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so they think they bid based on that.
It's a fun idea. Yeah. It's a neat idea. We got a big restock on indie RPGs.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what all we got in there. I remember Hamsters and Himbos.
Yes.
How can you forget?
So not only that, but we have just done some rearranging. We're still kind of tidying it up. But you'll see, I think, some pretty cool rearranging in the store, including indie games have migrated to a bigger section, actually.
Yep, that's right.
More face-outs. That's along kind of in the back corner of the store, but it's like they really get to face out more.
Yep.
I think it's a better display. So people have been saying that they've really liked it. That section has been taken off.
Yep.
Come check it out. There's like a nice, very good row of solo games right now, which we always like to try and keep up. And I got it a little more orderly for the moment, so the games are all alphabetical as they're faced out. So if you're looking for something and you know the name, bam, we can find it.
Among the new games we got was You're in Space and Everything's Fucked.
Yes.
Yeah.
Goblin Quest.
Uh-huh.
Hook, Line, and Cyber. I was looking at the Eat the Reich, which is the vampire super soldiers versus Nazi vampires.
Yep.
And then, a bunch of solo games back in. And yeah, it's a good selection of stuff.
Yeah, I'm always excited to see a new batch in. I need to make up the some description cards for it that and then that will eventually make me buy some of these games because inevitably I fall in love with them as I make the signs.
We got a expansion for Unfathomable, which is the Battlestar Galactica the Cthulhu reskin, basically.
Yeah, right.
Where you are working against Cthulhu aboard a Titanic-style
like an ocean liner. Yeah.
The new expansion is called The Abyss. I don't know what all it adds, but I know it's going to be new content.
Yep. Back when the game that inspired it, or that there was a reskin version of Galactica, we played that with some of the expansions. Like you could have like the Pegasus expansion or some other thematics from later seasons and stuff. But it was a really well designed game, so I can see why they would revamp it for Cthulhu intrigue.
So much better than the actual show.
Yep.
Oh, was it? The actual show at its best was great.
And then.
But you know what's cool about, by the way, about that Galactica game is it did represent the show at its best.
Yeah,
like it wasn't the later seasons. There was no Fat Apollo.
There was no Fat Apollo. and the one last thing now, as you're listening to this, since it's Wednesday when you're listening to this, hopefully, or Tuesday night we're closed. We now have HeroClix Deadpool and Wolverine. The newest HeroClix set is out this week, which has a play-at-home kit that comes with Deadpool and Wolverine, a Iconics that is Wolverine. It's his first appearance, so it's Wolverine, Hulk, and Wendigo.
Yes.
And then,
that's cool-looking.
And then the booster packs, which have a bunch of cool stuff in them.
Yeah. I like the idea of, like, recreating the original Hulk, Wolverine, Wendigo tussle.
Same. Yeah.
I see lots of different versions of Logan. It looks like the 90s Jim Lee-era X-Men in their blue and gold costumes.
Okay, all right. That's kind of cool. Fun. All right, let's talk about comics for the last couple weeks. And we're going to focus mostly on this week because it's not a small week.
No.
But worth mentioning a couple things from the previous weeks. We'll hit those first. Destro number 1 came out.
Yes.
We talked about Scarlet just before we took our unplanned hiatus. Destro is the flip side, whereas this Destro is to Scarlet as Cobra Commander was to Duke.
Yep.
If I were doing an SAT question, that's what I would do. He's the villain side of things.
She's like,
the hero
like,
side of things.
Yeah, I guess so. You said, but she's not like sort of. Destro's kind of usually been the second in command of Cobra.
No, I'm saying the series.
Oh, I see what you're saying. All right, I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm saying the series. They're doing one G.I. Joe, one Cobra.
I see what you're saying.
Destro's the Cobra series.
But he's definitely not a second fiddle to Cobra Commander.
No, he is in fact.
In this new universe, he's.
He is in fact, he has his own like weapons. He's running a country, essentially.
He's usurping an entire nation, which.
Yep.
Long-time readers will recognize this fictional nation from G.I. Joe comics, but he's using technology that you'll have seen if you've read some of the previous ones. He's got like those bat robots, the battle android troopers, juiced up on energon, and they'll like shred through your army, and so you're getting the machinations of Destro. There's intrigues and stuff like that going on. It's a good first issue.
I like their version of bats because it's very much in line with how they were always written to be, that they're basically just thrown in and they'll kill whatever they find. They're not supposed to be kind of like...
Not Terminators where they're like calculating and stuff.
No, they're just mindless things that will destroy everything on a battlefield.
But they are, like, in the cartoon, like, I don't know, Sergeant Slaughter or somebody would go and like beat up 10 of them. Like, even one of them would be super dangerous in this. They're, and especially juiced on energon.
This comic also introduces us to a another group of individuals.
There's some rivals.
Yep.
Which are known Cobra type villains.
Yep.
You know you're going to get fun guest stars in all of these.
And I like that we're getting Destro with his Iron Grenadiers.
Yeah, they just
like his private force.
They worked him in right from the beginning, you know, as like right because he's not formally associated with Cobra yet, or that kind of started to happen at the end of Cobra Commander, but his Iron Grenadiers are his boys.
And this also has a character from weirdly the Transformers animated cartoon.
Yeah, they've taken a lot of inspiration from the cartoon, even though they've gone, you know, a little bit more, a little edgier.
Yeah.
But they've taken, for sure, inspiration from it.
Yeah. This is written by Dan Waters, who's the British guy. He's written The Six Fingers, The One Hand, or one of those.
Oh, okay.
So in his afterword, he mentions that he knows Action Man, but he'd never read G.I. Joe. So he's coming at it too.
Oh, interesting.
So he is, like, all new to all this.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a solid first issue.
What else we got?
We got Gotham by Gaslight. For those who don't know, This is the original one. Is written by recently deceased Brian Augustin, art by Mike Mignola. It is a...
It was the first Elseworlds.
Was it the
DC?
First Elseworlds?
It was.
And it is... No, the first Elseworlds was Holy Terror, Batman Holy Terror.
Mm-mm. This was first.
I think you're wrong, but anyway.
I'll look it up.
Okay. This is basically what if Batman was in the time of Jack the Ripper.
Yep. He goes up against him. I believe he's... It's thought that Bruce Wayne could be Jack the Ripper in it.
But it also serves as sort of steampunk, not steampunk, but like Gaslight Gotham.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They did already did one sequel at the time that Chuck Dixon Master and Eduardo Barreto did that was good. And now there's another sequel that they're putting out simultaneous with the reprint.
This is a longer one. I think it's like 8 or 12 issues.
It's Andy Diggle.
Written by Andy Diggle, art by Leandro Fernandez. Beautiful art by Leandro Fernandez.
It's great.
It's called The Kryptonian Age. And they're presenting the Kryptonians as almost like a lost Atlantean civilization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like there's artifacts that have fallen
to
Earth.
There's a museum, yeah. But the lead of this is actually Selina Kyle, who has come into Bruce's money, right? I think, didn't she... I don't even know if Bruce is in this.
Yes, it's primarily a Catwoman story for now.
No, she...
Or did she...
Her husband
died.
Recently died.
And she has his money, but she's... out doing the Catwoman thing as well.
And she's, like, helping, like, the underprivileged people.
Yeah.
And,
there's a real sense of place in this.
Yeah.
And, like, fun, you know, steampunk Gotham by Gaslight designs.
But Batman is also...
I liked it quite a bit. Yeah, you're right. Batman is in there.
Randy,
yeah.
There's an interesting split decision here, although I am correct.
Of course I am right, yes.
The first Elseworlds title was Gotham by Gaslight, written by blah, blah, blah. So that is straightforward the answer. However... Uh-huh. The title was not originally published as an Elseworlds comics, but its success led to the creation of the Elseworlds imprint. The first book to feature the Elseworlds logo was Batman Holy Terror.
So in a way, we're both correct, but in a more accurate way, I'm correct.
I am correct.
It wasn't an Elseworlds book.
It created the Elseworlds books.
Yes, but it wasn't the Elseworlds book.
That's true. somewhat like... It's sort of like how Swamp Thing was basically proto-Vertigo.
Vertigo, but he wasn't actually Vertigo.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I hadn't realized that it was actually before.
I think because I was there for all of this, and I like kind of watched the creation, I always think of it as
So did
that.
I, but I remember it differently because I read this and enjoyed it, but I don't think I knew the behind-the-scenes thing of like, oh, that's why they made...
Right.
I just remember Holy Terror and the Elseworlds being created, and I'm like, oh, that's a cool idea, and I really liked Holy Terror, which is deeply out of print.
Still my favorite Elseworlds,
it's
by
great.
The way.
Written by Alan Brennert, legendary Alan Brennert.
And,
Norm Brayfogle on art.
And Norm Brayfogle killing it.
Yeah, and, I believe, doesn't somebody bounce a bullet off of,
A Christ-like Superman?
Christ-like Superman and kill someone accidentally with it or something?
Yes, 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 because it's a world that we can't really associate
now. No, it's hard to imagine.
But it's a world where a theocracy has been installed.
Yeah.
And Bruce Wayne's the Bat thing is from a, like, what do they call it, like a mystery play.
Yeah.
And it was like the symbol of the devil in it. And he is like a pious religious person in a corrupt religious society.
It's really hard to imagine today a corrupt religious society.
Who would take something like something holy and pervert it into a bid for power?
No one would. It's ridiculous. Why? It's out of print, I'm sure.
It's really good. Y'all read it if you can.
If sarcasm could melt computers, we'd have to stop podcasting.
Mm-hmm. We're going to be rounded up for this, Randy, in the new regime.
By the Batman. Also, we got X-Men Heir to Apocalypse, or Heir of Apocalypse. Nick, you may know more about this than we did. I guess Apocalypse rules Mars now?
I think so, but I think he might be dying or something, and he is trying to figure out who to leave his power and throne.
Right,
to,
it is his heir on Earth. That's what I read.
12 candidates to be tested in body, mind, and spirit.
Now, I thought I saw, like, I don't know, like Nightcrawler or some like normal person in there, and I'm like, is Nightcrawler going to be like, oh, thanks for giving me your inheritance on Earth, like your evil organization or whatever?
It's a little weird because the like Exodus and Mr. Sinister and the Gorgon, that all makes sense, but like Forge, Cypher, Emma Frost, Richter, Wolverine are all in here, and I'm like,
they don't
weird.
Seem like obviously replacements for him, but I guess to know that secret, you'd have to read the
read
story.
Read the book.
Yes. Yeah. In the Time Life tradition of old,
yes.
Read the book.
Yes. All right, let's
that's
jump
for
in.
Our, that's for our older viewers.
I also do want to mention that the Jason Aaron's Uncle Scrooge came out.
Yeah, but we only have one left.
Oh, do we?
Yep.
Okay, I thought we had more than that.
Nope, we have one left. So
well, one person
if you
can...
Yes, if you're listening to this and you don't have it, Come get it, because we have one left. And
Speculators pounced on it.
I don't know that it's going to get reprinted. So, I mean, it probably will. But
yeah. Okay.
But it was it had a fun premise of a multiversal Uncle Scrooge's.
But yes, that's why I didn't bring it into mention. I forgot to mention to you guys before the time. We only have one left, so I didn't want to tease people, but now we've teased them.
Yes.
Better hurry, people. Who knows how much it could be gone, but maybe it's not.
Maybe not. You better come in. One thing, don't call. Just come in.
That's right.
And then if it's not here, buy something else.
That's right. Consider a possible hardcover archive book.
Yes, exactly. Why get a single issue of Uncle Scrooge when you buy a $125 Marvel omnibus?
What a sneaky plan.
Yeah, yeah.
We probably shouldn't say it out loud like that.
Oh, no.
Whoopsie.
It is worth mentioning the Romnibus Volume 2 came out, so if you are looking for a hardcover...
That will take you to the conclusion of his story.
Is it really? I thought maybe there'd be a third one. There's only two?
I think that's enough to reprint the whole thing because it ran about like 70 issues.
Well, will it have the Secret Wars 2 tie-in, which is the only issue of Rom I owned, where Rick Jones cures his cancer by becoming a radioactive powered food superhero?
It almost certainly does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was weird. That was the only time. I was reading all the Secret Wars 2 tie-ins, so that's the only issue of Rom I have. Rom is not in it, as far as I know, but Rick Jones is. Very weird.
Sure.
But, you know, there was, although some later issues were drawn by a somewhat uninspired Steve Ditko, who I think was just trying to survive.
You know, he created Speedball about around that time, too, I think.
Sounds about right. Not as potent as his 60s heyday. Yeah. So the art was not great in the last issue of Rom, but... Like, he came to Earth with a mission to stop the Wraith shapeshifters from infiltrating and destroying Earth like they had, like, his planet. And he did it. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, that's cool. Like, there's an actual ending to this story.
Dave, it's like that meme. It's like Jesus predicted the end of all evil.
Odin promised to kill the frost giants. I don't see any frost giants.
So, Rom, Odin...
That's right.
Better than Jesus.
That's the clear message that Marvel is trying to send.
I agree. this is the podcast where we get excommunicated from I don't know what everything.
The Pope is already against Rom. Now he's against us.
The Pope is always talking about Rom constantly.
Is he a direwraith?
Yeah, I think the Pope might be a direwraith. He might just not like Rom. He's not a direwraith. He just doesn't like space knights.
The direwraith, they're not so bad. They're not such a bad thing.
All right. Ongoing, as we've missed the last couple of weeks, is Blood Hunt, which I said, issue 3.
Right, Marvel's big, their summer vampire crossover.
This week is issue 4. I believe we're all still on board this.
Yes. A little ups and downs is one might expect from any crossover, especially when you read sort of the side titles. But the core title's really been quite a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And we've just read up to the latest issue 3, 4?
4. Four.
And I think
the final issue is 5.
Is the next one?
Yeah.
And there's some dope stuff that goes down.
Yeah. Usually by this point of a crossover, at the 3/4 mark, we're all like...
begging to die.
Yeah. But I think we're all digging this and looking forward to the ending. They also just want to say, we didn't actually have say it out loud, I think, but called it.
Yeah.
Who the villain is.
Yes.
And good catch there, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was super cool. It gets revealed in this issue. There's some really fun stuff with Doctor Doom and Doctor Strange.
And Black Panther.
And Black Panther.
And Thor.
And McKay brings in some of his Moon Knight stuff. And
yeah. Yep.
It's really good.
And then a certain Asgardian foe, I guess I'm going to say. Yes. Or a foe of Thor.
Yeah. Anyway, really looking forward to the conclusion of this in about 2 weeks. There's a lot of Blood Hunt tie-ins this week. Moon Knight gets another issue, which... Well, the thing I'm loving about Moon Knight, and I know, Dave, you'd been reading a little bit before Blood Hunt started.
Yep.
Is the transformation of all people, 8-Ball, into a redeemed hero.
Yes. 8-Ball, for people who don't know, was like a true C-list villain from, I guess, the 80s. He could have gone back to the 70s.
Yep.
And he's like a dude in like a black jumpsuit with like literally like
a giant 8-Ball for a head.
8-Ball for a head.
Mantlo creation.
He's a Ghost Rider villain. I know that for sure.
He could have been Mantlo. That sounds possible.
I have to look.
So, but it could have been so many people. But yes, it's what do you call it instead of the very easy thing that a lot of people writers do, which is you take a kind of goofy villain and they're just a joke and they get punched out. Is like he's kind of treated it seriously and treated him like this guy, like a person with a real character arc.
So, as an aside, Superior Spider-Man comes to a close this week with issue number 8, and it had done a thing where Otto had mind controlled everybody. He's basically used like spiders and he's sort of turned all of New York into a hive mind where he controls it all.
Yep.
And he had some villains working for him, including it was 8-Ball and the meteorite guy or whatever his name is. Looter. The Looter.
Okay.
Old school guy. And I was annoyed because I'm like, 8-Ball's a hero. What's he doing here? As I felt like Dan Slott maybe hadn't been paying attention.
Uh-huh.
But no, in fact, when Spidey needs them, Looter and 8-Ball turn on Otto, and they're like, yeah, we had full face masks. We kept the spiders out. And and Spidey's like, why are you helping me? And Looter's like, what? I don't want to live in a world where everybody's Doc Ock. I just got engaged. There's no way I'm marrying someone with Octavius's brain. And 8-Ball's like, actually, I'm kind of a good guy now. Just ask Moon Knight. I've been helping him out. I was like, okay, that's pretty great.
Good job, Dan Slott.
That's pretty great.
You actually read some comics outside your own.
Yeah.
If only other people did that when they used those characters.
It was a great little bit, an unexpected little Moon Knight surprise.
That's kind of like one of those old school kind of comic book things that I really like when they pull it off, which is, it shouldn't be that hard.
No, it shouldn't.
If you're going to kind of like use somebody from another person's book, see what the current status quo is.
That's all we ask.
Don't just read the Wikipedia entry on the
also
person.
That kind of feels like it should be an editor's job. I don't know how many editors are actually working anymore, so
but this was a success, so good job.
Also, 8-Ball was created by Bob Budiansky and Brad Blevins.
Bob Budiansky,
wow, that's weird. Okay.
Didn't he do some of the Transformers comics back the day?
Back to the Blood Hunt, we've got Midnight Suns, which is a group of Ghost Riders, Victoria Montesi from the Montesi Formula, Blade's former ally of Tulip.
Yep. All of his allies who are now forced to try and hunt him down.
Yep.
They have their first run-in.
I thought this was kind of cool. I don't know if y'all read this, where it's like there's something that draws them to a hospital in Chicago, and it becomes this almost felt like an episode of Evil or something, like where they wander into somebody else's story.
Well, you know, they do a slightly meta thing, because they've all had weird dreams of this hospital, and they're like, well, we were about to go kick Blade's ass or figure out what his deal is, since he's leading the vampires. And then they're like, but we're having a vision of this hospital, and like, I don't know, Danny Ketch or something is like, well, the hospital probably in some way ties into Blade. Isn't that how these things always work?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I kind of like that. If you travel in mystic circles and that kind of thing is common, I don't think it's too meta to say something like that on occasion. That's fun.
Agreed. Second issue of Union Jack the Ripper, which is the British vampire hunter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very British version of Union Jack.
Yeah, it is.
But a good side story.
Is he like saying, oi, governor, a whole lot?
It feels like the villain is a soccer hooligan.
Oh my gosh. You know, those soccer hooligans can actually be pretty scary.
And then there's a magic one-shot as a compatriot to the Jubilee one-shot they did, where basically you take
magic from the X-Men.
You take one of the X-Men and be like, hey, what were they up to? They're doing the same thing with Laura Kinney, the Wolverine, is getting one as well.
I need to remember to check that out.
And Psylocke, isn't she?
Oh, Psylocke's getting one too, yeah.
Because I do feel like the Soul Sword is going to be quite the handy thing to have against legions of vampires.
True.
Yeah.
Superman finished its crossover, the House of Brainiac, with issues or parts 5 and 6, Action Comics and Superman, and it's got some good like Superman family action. It creates a new version of Brainiac who's going to play into the Absolute Power crossover, which, incidentally, also comes out this week. Absolute Power Ground Zero.
It's like the prelude sort of thing.
Yeah,
it
sets up, I think it's, what, 2 or 3 series stories?
Right.
I think 3.
Where it's 3 stories setting up a little bit more about the characters and what's going to happen in Absolute Power.
There's 3 stories, and then there's like a 3-page
a little teaser for Absolute Power.
I think people know the basic premise, but like Amanda Waller is moving pieces around on sort of the superhero, supervillain chessboard. With the intent of like being able to like remove powers from people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She's done with superheroes,
and so this is like sort of her big play, and a pretty dramatic thing happens on the last page.
Yep.
But this is the sort of lead in where you see who all she's pressed into service and how they get under her control.
There's a new Black Label Zatanna, Bring Down the House, with art by Javier Rodriguez. Nick, I know you really dig this.
I really dug this. It's kind of an Elseworlds Zatanna story about her dealing with a little bit of PTSD.
It's a different version of Zatanna. She's not like quite the somewhat fun and glamorous character that we usually associate with her. She's a person who did not really take hold of her magic powers because of it.
Like, she's not part of the Justice League.
No.
Right. She had a childhood incident where magic went real wrong.
Yep, and she is working at kind of the crummiest casino in Las Vegas.
Yep.
and doing kind of magic tricks for a show, and then something happens.
Right.
But
she's not like what you would call, she would probably say she's not living up to her potential, but that's because she's terrified her potential could be monstrous.
Right.
But maybe she's going to have to.
I thought it was a really interesting first issue, and the art is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, Javier Rodriguez is one of those artists that can do no wrong. He's the one who did the
History of the
History
Marvel Universe,
and that's stunning.
Did he also draw that one Teen Titans story recently that had Starfire's origin in it? Like, it had, like, Tamaranians?
He might
There was,
have.
Like, a little Teen Titans backstory thing. I think he did. Yeah. In fact, I'm, like, 90% sure. When they were doing those, each issue focuses on a different Teen Titan.
He's one of those artists that can really just do no wrong.
Yeah, he's really good.
So I'm curious to see where this goes. I think it's a 6-issue mini.
Okay. Let's see what else
and
we got.
And then we got Giant Size Little Marvels, which is Scotty Young writing, different artist Dex Gordine, who draws in very Scotty Young style.
I was going to say, it was a really good homage to Scotty Young's Little Marvels.
Thing. Nick, you read all this as well, right?
I skimmed it.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lot of fun. There's, I think...
Four stories in there.
A couple of heroes, one, like, a legion of villains getting together, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah.
Tony Stark auditioning new suits from various heroes. I thought was a lot of cool fun.
I know that these stories are, like, they're fun for adults, but I think, like, especially if I were a kid, you know, like, kids just, like, will lock onto Garfield or Calvin and Hobbes or whatever. Yeah. Like, this would be amazing, a really well-drawn, cartoony Marvel Universe thing. So I think if you got kids who could like to draw or like that kind of stuff, like comic strips
and things.
This feels
kind of like a little Pixar-ish kind of shorts.
Yeah, you should pick it up. Giant Size Little Marvels.
Thanos Annual number one. You might be saying, Thanos doesn't have a series right now. And you're right. But he can still have an annual.
That's how powerful he is.
But this is also kicking off...
The Deathstone Saga. This is going to be a series of annuals, kind of like what they did with Evolutionary War and some of those. Basically, this has happened a few years back. They're just kind of going back to some stuff. But basically, the Infinity Stones took on human form. There's a variety of humans who have, like... There's a guy with a space stone who has teleporting powers. And there's a girl named Star who was a... he's got the Reality Stone, who was Captain Marvel's villain. And... Thanos decides he's going to gather up all these people and make a new Infinity Gauntlet because he turned death into the Death Stone.
Yeah.
He made a new stone out of death and is using his, she's trying
to... Oh, that is death, the person he's usually trying to be his girlfriend.
So he's basically trying to use her power and she is resisting him as a stone, and so he's going to gather up all the other stone bearers and rebuild the Infinity Gauntlet. It's an interesting...
Solid premise.
I assume by gathering the people he's going to kill them.
Yes.
Because he wants... to rip the stones from
right,
body.
Right. But, we'll see how that goes. It's going to be running across a variety of different annuals.
Yeah.
From Mad Cave Studios, we have Gatchaman number one, a.k.a. Battle of the Planets.
Battle of the Planets, or G-Force. Kind of G-Force is the team, but Battle of the Planets was the show. An early anime for a lot of people. Basically, if you were a kid in the late 70s, you probably saw this as one of your first anime things. Yep. But yeah, the team gets Cullen Bunn, you know, one of those real, you know, rock solid writers in comics.
Mm. Yep.
Is writing it. And that's the whole team version, and there's like a side spin-off for Ken, the sort of the leader. They're Cyclops.
Yep.
He also gets a little side series where he's... I thought this was kind of fun.
Oh, I think this is a one-shot, isn't it? Or is it a series?
I
thought it was a one-shot.
I thought it was a series. Oh, yeah, maybe it's a series of one-shots.
I think
that's
is.
What it is, yeah. But it had a fun idea. The bad guys have, like, their Hydra goons, you know, the main bad guy. I think they call him Galactor in this.
Yeah.
Fans of the old cartoon would know him as Zoltar.
Uh-huh.
But Galactor has his, like, goons that he's got. And I guess he also secretly runs, like, this, like, violent gladiatorial fight club. And, like, if you lose, you're hunted by, like, the troops of his... to, like, train his troops. The losers are, like, released the world's most dangerous game style or something. Okay. I was like, oh, that's a fun premise. Here's how the bad guy gets his thugs, basically.
Speaking of fun premises, we've got an Image book called Self-Help by Stephen King's other son, Owen King.
Yep.
And written, also co-written with Jesse Kellerman. This is about a guy who's, like, an Uber driver.
Yep.
He has a cracked phone. He's really not living his best life. He's divorced. But he happens to look exactly like self-help guru Darren Hart, who is kind of a jerky self-help guru.
Yeah, they actually show you him at, like, one of his seminars, And he's like, you just gotta tell people, tell the world to go fuck itself.
Yeah, he seems awful.
But, like, people, like, he kind of, it's self-empowerment, but in, like, this really negative feedback.
Yeah. Yep.
And he ends up in the cab of, or the Uber of this,
this
dude
guy who looks
like
exactly like him.
And this is where it kind of shifts into a slightly noirish mode,
yeah.
as there is some question of violence replacing him, living out some of his life.
I was not sold on this at the beginning because I'm like, too much of this guru who I'm like, I hate. But then when they got to the ending, I'm like, oh, now I want to see where this goes.
It's a fun last few pages and, yeah. and kind of premise.
And nice art. It's got, I don't know how to describe it exactly. It's got that stylized thing of like a Michael Larker those, but it's not that. It's
I would say it works within the style of people, like the artists that worked with noir artists, like noir stories like Chip Zdarsky's.
It's sort of brighter than that and a little more animated style, like clean line than that.
You're right. Yeah. But solid first issue, yeah.
If you're a fan of Neil Gaiman, he has Anansi Boys. This is adapted by Mark Bernardin, who you've seen write a bunch of stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Art by Sean Martinbro, who's really great. I have not read Anansi Boys. I've only read... Is this Anansi the spider?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is he from American Gods? Is this a spin-off of American Gods?
No, I think
it's
his own
thing. They use him in American Gods.
Oh, right.
But,
so it is the same character?
Or is it just more like another
more
take
like
on
another
the same?
Version of...
I think it's another version of...
Okay.
I know, like, twin brothers find out that basically their father was Anansi, the African trickster god.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think he maybe has died, and there's, I'm sure, some question of lineage. And
okay.
Maybe he had schemes or something going on, and they end up having to deal with. I have not read it either.
Anansi was actually one of my favorite parts of the American Gods show. So
okay,
was it Orlando Jones?
Yeah,
not Orlando Bloom. Right. That'd be
no,
very different.
It was Orlando Jones.
really Orlando, not cool.
Orlando Bloom playing Anansi is not cool. there is a Godzilla. Here They Be Dragons 2. This was the original. This was a like the
Fantasy
notion was
dragons,
that,
right?
Well, was, if you sail off the edge of the world, the dragon there was Godzilla,
right? The sea serpents that they used to draw on maps, that was Godzilla and Kaiju. So what I gather this is, again, this is from just making the sign for it.
Yep,
is revealed in that is some secret cult that worships Kaiju, and I believe this is showing their influence on history over the time. That maybe they've manipulated Godzilla's appearances or other monsters. And I was like, that's kind of a neat idea.
Yeah, it is.
Well, this starts off in like ancient Japan and then moves to 1804 New Jersey where there's people dueling. And yeah. I see it's like jumping through time and that kind of thing.
Well, there's nothing more satisfying than when you're in a pistol duel with somebody and you
Godzilla.
Snap your fingers and a kaiju comes out.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's my boy.
He's my second.
He's my second. Smash cut to Hamilton's 10 rules or
yes,
whatever.
Yes. The 10 Godzilla duel commandments. And also the same week, we have Godzilla King of the Monsters. This is the Marvel one.
A
reprint facsimile
from like what mid-70s?
Mid-70s.
Yeah, or like I think it was 77.
Who's the artist on this?
It's Herb Trimp.
Herb Trimp and Jim Mooney.
Yep.
Doug Mensch writing. This
you know
is
what?
Godzilla in this series goes up against S.H.I.E.L.D. as represented by Dum Dum Dugan.
Yep.
And he is in this first issue. He's got his like jet plane.
Yeah, it was Godzilla in the Marvel Universe. I just skimmed this a little bit, but there was like I think he there's a little bit of climate change stuff that was acknowledged early on in this that they were worried about ecological stuff in the 70s, and at some point check out this line: Godzilla rips up like a pipeline
yep,
and he like
yep.
swings it like a whip, and they're like precious oil to feed the starving cars and furnaces of America. I love the writer's authorial voice in this.
This facsimile has all the ads in the Marvel bullpen and a Spider-Man versus Madam Web, not that Madam Web, in a Twinkies commercial.
Yep.
What's funny, Dave, is I just did a quick count, and this is a 32-page comic. There are 17 story pages in here.
Oh, wow.
There's people complain about ads, but man, there were so many more ads in 70s comics.
Yeah.
Because people actually wanted to have the ads. Also on the back, it has an ad that I remember from my youth of Street Ball with Rick Barry and Dr. J. Do you remember this?
Oh, absolutely, because it
yes.
was drawn by that Mad Magazine artist Jack Davis.
Oh, is that who it is? It's very memorable. It's like they show up playing, these kids are playing basketball, And they're basically talking
about... It's like Dr. J!
Yeah. He's like, you got to practice with a Spalding autograph ball. It's got a rubber cover so you can really get a grip on it. And I'm like, they're all basketballs, y'all.
Randy, I have to read you one more line here. This is another good one. Yep. This is from Doug Mensch, I believe, writing.
Okay.
Godzilla sets ablaze this, like, oil field and it all goes up.
Yeah.
Within moments, the entire valley is a seething inferno, and Godzilla stands king, a prehistoric brute scorning the advanced technology of American government and corporation alike.
Wow.
Look at this anti-capitalist Godzilla
shit.
Yeah,
it's great. I've read all this in the Essential format. I'm definitely looking forward to the omnibus coming out. I actually really like this run. It's a good first issue. Energon, there is an official Energon.
There is an official one.
Void Rivals number 10 this week?
Yep. Which reveals some pretty big notable things for the Energon universe.
I think we already talked about the previous issue introduced into the storyline Springer.
Yep.
The good guy, Triple Changer. Yep. There's not too many of them.
Originally introduced in the
Transformers movie. Yeah, and voiced by the same dude who did Duke.
It's true.
Back when. And you said, I read that first issue. It was cool. He runs up against an interesting, much smaller foe, but very dangerous.
Yeah, that puts him... in his place in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And that battle continues on, but there are some notable things. I'm really just liking the story. I like the characters. I like their banter. I really like the artwork by Lorenzo De Felici.
Mm-hmm. Right on.
So yeah, those are great issue.
There's also a G.I. Joe Real American Hero issue, which this continues to be insane in a really fun way.
This is the old school, the original G.I. Joe story from 1981 or whatever.
Zombie Serpentor is now working with a artificially intelligent robot nation while ninjas spy on him. And there's something else going on in here, too. Zartan is in here, too.
It's some crazy stuff, but it does feel like it kind of slots in in a way.
Of course it does. It's Larry Hama. I mean, he's the guy who created all this.
Yep.
So.
Yep. What else we got?
I greatly enjoy it. Also from Skybound, we've got Creature from Black Lagoon Lives, number 3, which I don't know if y'all are still reading this. I
did not. I fell off.
This is Dan Waters, who we talked about earlier, who wrote Scarlet, Destro.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And I really am enjoying this. The art is beautiful, and the sort of tying into a serial killer that the woman's tracking comes to an interesting penultimate issue, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. There's a serial killer stalking the Amazon, right?
Yeah. We got the latest issue of World Tree, which, again, I think y'all fell off on. We're like, I'll catch up when it's a trade.
Yep. I have to say, I do sometimes fall off of the single issues for James Tinian, but when I occasionally have returned on them, The Deviant, man, it is good lately. It's super good.
Yeah, this is the same way. I lost the thread a few issues back, and I'm sort of like, I don't entirely know who all the characters are all the time.
Obviously, what we're saying is the trade paperback form will read particularly well if you're not doing this.
But I am really enjoying it again. I'm like, there's such creepy imagery and really big ideas, and mm-hmm. Tinian is really good at this.
Speaking of Tinian, there is another of his books that gets a second issue this week. This is
Spectrograph.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of his L.A. ghost house, haunted house story.
Yeah, a rich person built a house with a sort of weird mysteries in it, which we find out all about in this issue, what the intent was. And also, as awful as this person was portrayed in the first episode...
I like that she showed some...
There is... I don't know. I'm not going to put the word forgiveness out on the table, but she is revealed to be not the monster, total monster that we thought she was.
Yeah,
and that's interesting.
Desperate
along
people
with
people will do desperate things to survive, and
we're
seeing that she has a little bit of backbone, which I thought was really, really interesting.
And there's a lot of flashbacks in this issue that do kind of basically we know. I think I would say the gist of what's going on. And is there one more left?
I believe so. It's a 3-issue story. And Ward's artwork is...
I think the story are all 3.
Yeah, it's surreal. There's like two different types of ghosts that are kind of chasing them around. And like one looks like it's just like entrails and guts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The other is this weirdly timid one that they're like...
The skin.
That they can... They think that they can... They're not too worried about it, but they also don't know what its deal is. Yeah. It's interesting. It makes the ghosts really weird and unknowable.
And then I just want to mention Spectacular Spider-Man number 4, Spider-Man Ghost Spider number 2, and the latest issue of Daredevil are all out this week as well. Anything else on y'all single issue piles?
I think you mentioned all the ones that I was going to. The Redcoat number 3 and Rook number 3, oh, yeah. which I thought... Yeah. I'm still enjoying what Geoff Johns is doing, making his own universe yep. of random stuff. Redcoat,
heroic like adventure, but not necessarily superheroes.
Right. Yeah, Redcoat, for some reason, is the one that sticks out the most for me.
You like British Bastards.
British Bastards, yes. Give it to me now. Yeah. But that's all I've got.
And I'll mention that there's the third issue of the Darth Maul Black, White, and Red out. I haven't had a chance to read
Who
it yet.
Who writes this one, do you know?
I don't know.
It's, I believe, Stephanie Phillips. Okay. And art by the always fantastic Leonard Kirk.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, the first two were exceptionally good for like these kind of art projects. And I'm looking forward to reading the third.
All right, we're going to get a quick break and then come back and catch up on some of the news we've missed. All right, so we're going to start by recording on the news that we have that is not trailer-related.
Okay.
Because there's a bunch of trailers. There's like a dozen of them.
Right, we got them queued up to report on, but we may do it next week. We'll see.
It depends. It's running a little late, and there was a lot of stuff to talk about, y'all.
Yeah.
We missed 2 weeks.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, for taking this journey with us.
Right. So, anyway, and Watermelons.
The best podcast that we've ever done.
Yes, the penultimate.
I'm sorry.
Or the ultimate.
We're really trying. We're
going to try.
We're going to talk about the wonders of golden watermelons.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Where are the yellow watermelons?
The yellow watermelons.
I didn't actually grow up loving watermelons. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh,
I love watermelons.
Summer treat.
I didn't mean to start with a watermelon.
There we are.
Anyway, Elle Fanning, you may know from The Great.
Yep.
You may know her from other things, too, but that's like her big
thing.
Was
she the kid in War of the Worlds?
She was.
There we go.
Oh, wow. Okay. Elle Fanning is going to be in Badlands.
And I know her sister's Dakota Fanning. Right?
Her sister's Dakota Fanning. This is a new Predator movie.
Okay.
A standalone Predator movie.
Kind of like Prey was.
From Dan Trachtenberg, who you may remember as the director of the good Cronenberg project? The monster that's found footage.
Yeah.
The one with, what's her name? God damn it. The Huntress is trapped with John Goodman in a house.
10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yes. Dan Trachtenberg directed 10 Cloverfield Lane.
That's true.
I love 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Is where I was trying to get to.
We got there.
We got there. It took a while.
Yeah.
I can't remember if he is directing this or just...
He's directing it.
So, this
He also directed Prey.
He did direct Prey as well, yes. Which, unfortunately, that doesn't strike against him because, like, Dave, you and I are both lukewarm on Prey.
I didn't finish it.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
You're more lukewarm than I am.
Wow. I'm pro-Prey. I thought it was really good.
We have the Trinity. Nick loved it. I thought it was okay. Dave hated it.
I loved the idea of it, but I just was not drawn into it.
Interesting.
At some point, I am going to finish watching it just to get through it. No, I think it probably gets a little bit cooler, once they actually run into the Predator.
I wound up liking it, but it is a slow burn to start.
A little bit of a slow burn.
Yeah.
He's also directed episodes of Black Mirror and The Boys. So, yep. I mean...
Okay, so he's done
definitely
things.
Been around.
So he's doing the new one.
And we don't know much about it. They're keeping all the plot details under wraps, so Badlands could be a code name.
Oh, we don't even know the premise.
We don't even know the premise. They're keeping it under wraps.
She is a young woman in Victorian society
who is forced to marry a predator.
Forced to marry a predator, but it turns out he has the makings of a gentleman after all.
Pride and Prejudice and Predators.
Pride and Predators. So just to double check, the guy who made the last Predator movie is making the next Predator movie. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes, but when you say it that way, it's a lot more boring.
Okay.
It'll be another...
on quite the journey, Randy.
Your Victorian idea is not crazy. I still wanted them to do kind of like a Japanese Done Again kind of...
Yeah. After Prey, I think we all were like, oh, put the Predator in different timelines.
Not Done Again, the guy that was in the more recent, the Samurai show...
Oh, yeah, the guy from Shogun?
Yeah, why can I not think of that guy's name?
I don't know.
He's been in everything. That's what people
Ken Watanabe.
No.
Okay. It's not him.
Different guy.
It's a good thought, though.
All right. Doesn't matter. Love Ken Watanabe, though. So, yeah.
I would like for them to stop making Predator movies.
Really?
Yeah.
I would like to stop making Alien movies, but...
both of those, but...
I'm pro-Predator, anti-Alien.
Are we talking politics?
You have to take a side. Aliens versus Predators. There's only two. You have to vote for one.
Illegal Immigrants versus Child Predators.
Oh, no, I hate this. Never mind.
This is not a fun conversation. Let's stop it right now.
All right, let's talk about Ghostbusters.
Yes.
There's a new Ghostbusters animated series in the work at Netflix.
Okay.
Ghostbusters
has done good at animated before.
Don't know much about it. It's being produced by Jason Reitman, who did Ghostbusters Afterlife and Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, both of which were movies that happened.
Yes.
I never saw the second one.
The Frozen Empire was just okay.
Yep.
Right up there with its predecessor.
I like the predecessor more, but...
Then let me just ask this: even for those who might enjoy these a little bit, the modern Ghostbusters a little bit more than me, are any of them even as good as Ghostbusters 2?
No,
I don't think so.
No,
okay, that's what I was thinking.
They're not.
And Ghostbusters 2 was a definite step down from Ghostbusters 1.
Yes,
but it wasn't a huge step down.
No, it was a pretty big step,
but it was a solidly good step.
You could fall over that step.
No, it's a little bit like looking back at like. Comics now, you're like, oh, comics of 10 years ago, the DC era was so good. It's kind of like that with the movies. It's like,
so I only when things become really bad do you appreciate how mediocrity might have been a little bit better than you expected it.
Yes, that is correct.
Yes, that's what I think.
Yeah,
that's where we're headed here.
Ghostbusters, the original, is great.
Yes.
Every other Ghostbusters is as good as a Predator and Alien sequel.
Yes. You know, I'll say this. I think I would take Ghostbusters 2 over most Predator and Alien sequels.
I think that's probably true for me, except Predator 2
had Danny Glover in a car. Its love is lifting me higher.
No, Danny Glover came out of a car full of weed and fought the Predator, so...
A car full of weed?
Car full of weed.
That's true.
How?
Predator 2.
What happened?
He was with the Jamaican crime lords. He got in their car and got smoked out.
Predator 2 is actually a lot of fun.
That's kind of fun.
And actually, it has Bill Paxton playing an obnoxious undercover cop.
I have seen it, and I remember liking it well enough, but I just have never been compelled to go back.
They were trying to do a, like, hey, what if instead of a covert ops team, it's like a futuristic crime unit, so, like, we still got the buddy cops.
Yep.
We still got, like, a whole
and
unit.
And I'll say this, they did what the Aliens movies have all been too scared to do, which is to drop it right in the city and stuff.
Yeah, they did.
And so there we go.
I don't know if this is a knock against it, but also Gary Busey.
That's in that era, that's acceptable.
Yes, in that era, right now, if you tell me Gary Busey's in it, I know that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
But in the 80s, if you say Gary Busey's in it, you had a 50-50 chance of it being good.
So my brain
I think better than 50-50.
Better than 50-50, okay.
Yeah. My brain has to do this. Ghostbusters, the original 5-star movie?
Yes.
Probably so.
Ghostbusters 2, a 3-star movie?
2.5, at best.
It could get me, three if you're like kind of riding some nostalgia.
Yeah, if you took a major traumatic brain injury,
yeah,
you'd be like, oh, that's a 3-star movie.
McNichol, it's fun.
Sure, Peter McNichol is fun.
And 2.5 stars.
2.5 stars
worth
of fun. Yep.
All right.
This, the Roguecast. Dave and Randy crush Nick's spirit.
I have always known I have weirder taste in movies than you guys. I watch a shit ton.
I like Ghostbusters 2 as a measurement of kind of vaguely mediocre space.
Yes.
So we'll be returning to it in the months to come.
Yes, we will.
It's better than Ballistic X versus Summer.
That's right.
Speaking of mediocre space, Josh Gad and Mel Brooks are making a Spaceballs sequel.
This is weird.
This is very weird.
I did not see this coming.
How would you?
Josh Gad is an actor.
He played the Olaf the Snowman
from Frozen.
Right.
He was in that fun zombie movie with Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah, he played a big jerk.
Yeah.
Which one was that?
He's also in Book of Mormon.
Well, what zombie movie?
It's not Girl with All the Gifts. It's
No, crap. I can't.
I don't know. She's a kindergarten teacher.
Yeah.
And zombie apocalypse, and he's like a performer who winds up with them.
Okay.
It was a lot of fun.
So,
it was fun.
Mel Brooks is unfortunately 2,000 years old now.
He's the 2,000-year-old man.
It's as prophesied by his most famous comic bit that catapulted him to stardom.
So I'll say this: I watched History of the World Part 1. Or part two,
yeah.
That they did on Hulu.
Yeah.
And it's got some cringy stuff, like really not funny, but there's some legitimately funny stuff in there too.
Sure.
He hasn't lost it entirely.
Right. And I would also say if he surrounds himself with sort of some good modern comedic talent, yeah, things could happen. It feels like it's probably not going to work out.
I agree, but at the same time, there's been so much space stuff since.
Yeah.
Spaceballs came out. There's so much to parody. Like a movie that parodies a bunch of Star Trek, Star Wars, Prometheus, all that kind of stuff together could really work.
I don't disagree. And I will say this. I will always root for Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
I don't care if he is actually 200 years old. I want him to succeed. He's brought a lot of greatness into the world. Yep. He seems like a good guy.
Yep.
So there we are.
But I believe measuring this against the Ghostbusters 2 scale of mediocrity, the odds that it will be a Spaceballs 2 will be better than Ghostbusters 2.
Yep.
Not great.
Ghostballs. We will eventually get to that movie.
Especially it's like at Amazon. It's...
Yeah, yeah. It's not super promising.
We'll be checking back to see if it can hit that Ghostbusters 2 mark.
Speaking of potential mediocrity, G.I. Joe Transformers, I think we're all hopeful that they could pull this off, make it work.
I'm pro G.I. Joe Transformers.
We're talking about the movie type thing. Yes. And just as a little bit of lead-in background, the last two Transformers movies, Bumblebee and Beast Wars.
Mm-hmm. Rise of the Beasts.
Both Rise of the Beasts. Both been good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Various stripes of good.
Rise of the Beast teased G.I. Joe in what I thought was a fun way.
Right.
Well, they are doing a G.I. Joe Transformers movies. We know from previous weeks that they've got Chris Hemsworth maybe circling to be... We're thinking Duke. We don't really know.
Right.
He could be Roadblock for all we know. I don't know.
I don't really want Hemsworth in my G.I. Joe Transformers.
I kind of don't either, but, you know, Hemsworth's always at least good. The writer is Jurassic World writer Derek Connolly. That lowers my interest by a Ghostbusters 2 factor of 3.
Yeah, but you don't like any of the Jurassic movies.
I do not like any of the Jurassic movies except the original.
There's actually some good stuff in there.
There really is. So.
I do think it's kind of probably each movie maybe is diminishing returns after Jurassic World, just like Jurassic Park.
But I will always say that there's at least one or two set pieces that are really, really interesting.
And I think a few good individual scenes within the big the greater mix. So I feel like that could, like... That is the kind of person who could be okay on a G.I. Joe thing. It just kind of depends on, is this the movie that they come through on or is it not?
We'll see. For me, it lowered my interest.
I mean, that's fair.
I want my interest to be lowered, though, because I don't want my expectations to be too high. Because that's that's a recipe for disappointment with G.I. Joe Transformers.
That's true.
There's a ceiling there that they cannot exceed.
At least we will know that the comics have been pulling it off.
Yeah.
If the movies can't, that's on them.
Make adaptations of the Intergen universe.
You know, if they were smart, they would bring in Skybound and be like, hey, can you guys consult with us on how we're building our movie universe? It's going to be different.
Yep.
Because they're building it off the movie universe. But those guys know how to build a universe.
Probably talk to Kirkman.
Yeah,
yes.
Talk to Kirkman. Terry Metalis, showrunner of Star Trek Picard seasons 2 and 3, but also said you ran
12 Monkeys, 12 Monkeys on Sci-Fi, I think.
Which was well liked.
Very well liked, and I think had 4 seasons. He was the showrunner on that, and he's now doing, what is it?
He is doing the Enemy Mine remake.
Okay.
I
don't know that we need a remake, but it had a few special effects that actually seemed dated in like 1985. But that said, that movie is like so sincere. I feel like it's a great movie for kids to see about like surprising your expectations. So you know this. Everybody's seen it, right? Everybody's seen Enemy Mine.
I haven't seen it in forever.
Nope. You haven't seen it, right?
Never seen it.
All right. Do you know what the premise is based on?
It's a future where mankind is warring with reptilian alien species, and an alien crashes on a desolate planet.
Uh-huh.
And they both have deep-seated hatred for one another, but are forced to overcome their prejudice to survive, and things are taken up a notch when the human pilot must take care of the alien's baby when the reptilian is no longer able.
It's kind of in that ballpark.
Nice reading of a synopsis, right?
That was just off the top of my head.
So that it was inspired by a movie from like the 60s called Hell in the Pacific,
mm-hmm.
about a guy which was set, the movie was set in the 40s, and it's at like an American pilot and a Japanese pilot crash on a deserted island and have to work together to survive and overcome their prejudices, et cetera, et cetera. I do think Enemy Mine, and this is directed by a guy who made Neverending Story and later on went on to do kind of... thrillers like Air Force One and stuff like that.
Wolfgang
Peterson.
Yep. Yeah,
I do think Enemy Mine is a lot of fun. It's like sometimes almost cringe sincere, but like you know, it was Dennis Quaid at peak Dennis Quaid.
Yep.
Louis Gossett Jr. killing it.
Yeah.
He's killing it with a like one of those performances, kind of like what would I associate it with? Where you really put on a persona the way, like, say, Mandy Patinkin did in Princess Bride. It's like, that's how much he was that character. And, I don't know if it needs to be remade. I should say, I'm sure it doesn't. Could it be done? Maybe. I'll allow that it's a possibility. And who's the director? The director is...
It's Terry Metalis.
Terry Metalis.
So here's the interesting thing. From this article, they mentioned that, you know, he was trying to do that Star Trek Legacy show.
Yeah.
And the CBS decided not to do it, which, by the way, dumb decision. I would have loved that show.
Which show?
The Seven of Nine running the Stargazer.
Yeah, yeah. I think I would too, but it would feel a little bit like spinning the wheels of like kind of era we've seen.
I guess I would have liked it. But anyway, after that, he got picked up to write the Vision show for Marvel.
Okay.
And he is working on this with Steve Asbell, who's a fellow Trek person. Metalis, Kevin Feige, and Asbell were on the Trek podcast Inglorious Trexperts earlier this year together, defending Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, which I'm now going to have to find and listen to that episode.
That movie don't need defending.
Well, I know.
A little bit of defending.
by the way, worked on 28 episodes of Nikita.
Oh, okay.
So here's why I think a remake could work, though, which is that this is clearly a story about, like, racial prejudice and stuff like that. And I don't know if people have noticed, but fascists around the world have been trying to fan the flames of racial prejudice.
I haven't noticed.
Yeah, certain scumbags in our own quarters, and it's Trump. I'm talking about Trump, of course. And all his sycophants have been really doing this for, like, the last 8-10 years. And somebody needs to show kids through a badass sci-fi story how awful those people are and how they need to not live like that.
Yes.
And if it takes a human space pilot and an alien lizard man to do that, then so be it.
Then we've got on the Trek front, Paul Giamatti has joined the pretty impressive Star Trek Starfleet Academy cast as the main villain.
Yeah. The weird thing about that was I'm like, wait, a school show has a villain?
Dave, I don't know if you've been paying attention to modern day, but schools have villains.
They do, but isn't it usually like the some awful Karen at the, you know, conference?
Paul Giamatti is going to be playing Space Karen.
I assume he'd like have a rival school or something.
I don't know, actually. I don't know if they've said yet, but it did occur to me that in these fictional school settings, this is actually very common. So Voldemort is the big one, mm-hmm. but over in X-Men land, Magneto and the Brotherhood mm-hmm. are the enemy kind of the X-Men school. And I believe I looked up somewhere, the Magicians, I mm-hmm. think, had like some, you know, big bads.
Yeah.
Buffy had big bads like each season. And so it's actually not that weird. And it occurred to me that, like, the whole point of, for people to know, is this Starfleet Academy show is set in the far-flung future for Trek, the 32nd century, like 800 years past Picard's time, so way future-y.
Yep.
But after like a galactic disaster that stopped space travel almost in its tracks for like a century and like brought things low, Starfleet is just getting back on its feet again, trying to unite the galaxy, and this would be a good time to screw with them.
Yeah.
Like, and Starfleet Academy is like there where the next generation is coming up. So if you wanted to infiltrate them, if Romulans wanted to stop them and screw with them, although the Romulans, I think, are kind of our friends now at that point.
Yeah. What if this is not like a true big bad? What if he is like one of the head people of the school and it's kind of like
right, like he's like trying to make it more like of a militarized force or something.
Yeah, he and Holly Hunter are sort of at odds.
Yeah,
I think that would be a better play for it. Because Paul Giamatti, just by himself, I'll watch anything he does.
I've seen him both play kind of like campy villains and like shoot 'em up, as well as like very nuanced and deep characters. And so, yeah, I'm pretty much open to all of the above. Again, I think it's a big coup to get Giamatti.
Yeah.
He
is a little bit like Philip Seymour Hoffman was. He just kind of brings this kind of gravitas.
A next level character actor.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yep, I'm for it.
And then a couple bits of casting here or development. The remember the comic Proof? Art by Riley Rosmo.
Yeah.
Basically, Bigfoot is an operative of like this secret government agency.
Right. Yep. Okay.
It was a cool idea.
It was a really neat idea, and I think it may be out of print.
I believe it is.
I bet they'll be putting it back in print because they're in development at Fox as a new either show or movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
I think it'd be a lot of fun. It was very much X-Files, but Bigfoot is one of the lead roles.
I was gonna say X-Files, but Mulder is played by Bigfoot.
Yeah, by Bigfoot. Yeah. and there were other I think Mothman and some other characters were in it. Like,
yeah,
that sounds
like
fun.
Mothman was like their information guy or something. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It was fun. And then we've got the casting on the Thursday Murder Club. This is a book that Nick and I both read.
Yeah, it's a really fun book.
It is a murder mystery set around an old age home in England.
In England.
And so sort of a murder happens. Someone's trying to sell the building out from under them, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of subplots going on throughout the book, but it's mainly about a group of individuals who are sort of coming together every week to sort of like talk about murder.
Yeah, but they're like, it's like amateur sleuths, and then someone actually dies near them, so they decide to do it. And
the cast on this is amazing.
Jonathan Pryce, Henry Lloyd Hughes from Killing Eve, David Tennant.
Helen Mirren.
Looking to see who else is in here.
Those are some big names.
Yeah. Pierce Brosnan. Ben Kingsley.
Oh, wow. They got a lot of Shakespearean people in there.
And it's written and directed by Chris Columbus.
That's kind of a hit or miss, but, Columbus has done some good stuff.
He can sometimes work, yeah.
The biggest thing that he did probably was like the first Harry Potter movie, the first two of them.
Well, I'll say this: the one thing about Chris Columbus that he does is maybe a little hard on his sleeve, a little bit too.
Yeah.
And I felt like the book was that way too. It was a little bit very genial, even though it was dealing with murder. Everything was very lightweight, right. And I feel like
kind of like that fun, cozy.
Yeah,
mystery
Columbus
way.
Might be the guy to bring this to make
okay,
it work.
Yeah, that's a good genre.
Yeah.
It sounds good. I'm excited to watch it.
The cast is amazing, and I'm definitely interested. That'll take care of us for the week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.